Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, March 2nd, 2008, and this is show number 138. What a great day I had today. It was amazing. Lindsay was home from college, which is good in of itself, but the best part was her car was a mess. It had been rained on for weeks and dirt and mud, and you should have seen the dirt just coming off her wheels alone. It was great. It was splattering all over me. I had to wash two shirts after I got done. Not only that, but the trunk and rear bumper really needed to be clayed and waxed. I know, that sounds like enough fun for one day, but imagine my delight when I noticed that the side walkway was all green with algae again because of the rains. Woohoo! Time to pull out the old power washer. It was awesome. I got to listen to two Buzz Out Loud episodes while I power washed that area. I think they're like 40 minutes apiece. It was great. Anyway, I had a good time, but it was finally time to come inside because the podcast must go on. Well, before I forget, next weekend, Steve and I are going off to Sedona, Arizona for a romantic vacation to celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary. Can you imagine? Well, we went there for our 20th anniversary, too, and we met this hilarious couple, Dean and Suzanne. I mean, they were so funny. We had a great time. So picture this. We have breakfast with them the first day we meet these people, and we're just loving them. So we said, hey, you want to go out for dinner with us tonight? And they said, ah, they had plans. So the next morning, we end up having breakfast with them again, and again, they're hilarious. We had a great time, but we didn't really want to go out with them that night because it was our actual 20th wedding anniversary, right? So anyway, we go to the owner of the hotel and asked him to recommend a restaurant, and so we picked out this swanky French romantic restaurant, and Steve made reservations, and we show up at the restaurant at the time of our reservations, and Dean and Suzanne are there, and jokingly, I said, are you guys stalking us? To which Suzanne replied, yes, we are. They had actually gone to the owner of the hotel, found out where our reservations were, called the restaurant, and changed it to a party of four. Oh my gosh, it was so funny. So, of course, we start eating dinner with them, and halfway through is when we told them that they had just encroached on our actual wedding anniversary. It was pretty funny. So, you know what? We didn't think our 25th would be any good if we didn't make them drag their butts back from Chicago to have dinner with us again. So anyway, the good news is over the years, the last 5 years, they have switched from the PC to the Mac. So, you know, it'll be a little better than it even was last time. You know, some people think it'd be more normal to want to be alone on your anniversary, but we set a precedent way back on our honeymoon by hanging out with this really fun guy from Switzerland. He enjoyed himself with us, but he kept saying, don't you guys want to be alone? Hey, we're a little weird, but you know what? We're happy we're together. Deliriously happy, I might add. All right, enough blathering. Get in. Let's dig into the show. Well, remember last week I did a review of Screen Steps, and I whined about how they fling all kinds of files around when you export to HTML, and that they didn't have any way for you to define a folder to put the files in? Well, Greg DeVore of Screen Steps answered that question, and he did it without pointing out that I'm a moron. You see, when you say export to HTML, it gives you the standard Save As dialog box. You know, the one complete with the new folder button and a way to navigate to it? I seriously do not know how I missed that. I do love how Greg explained it to me, though. He made a little screen step thingy to show me how to do save as. Again, not once calling me a moron or mocking me in any way, when I so clearly deserved it. Well, he also explained the difference between the three different versions. Remember I said they had a little checklist and I don't know, I was too lazy to figure it out? Well, he explained the difference. The standard version of Screen Steps only lets you export one lesson at a time. Pro lets you export a full topic as an HTML manual or a PDF manual. The reason I didn't understand it before was I didn't actually understand that there's a difference between a lesson and a manual. He pointed out again, gently, that I should have broken the Audacity manual up into lessons instead of one big gigantic file. Luckily, he even sent instructions on how to split it up after the fact. The free version of Screen Steps only lets you publish to Screen Steps Live. When users first get the application Screen Steps, they have a full 15-day trial. After that, it reverts to the free version. That's pretty cool because if they're using Screen Steps Live, they can keep using it to post to lessons after the 15 days is up. But he said most people end up purchasing a license at that point. So they give you that taster and then you figure out whether you want it or not. I think that's a great license model. I really like that. He did agree that including a PDF manual for screen steps for download would be a good idea, so I'm looking forward to that. You might recall I was actually on the plane when I was trying to learn how to use the application, which is my excuse for not knowing about lessons and manuals. Anyway, he said they're also going to clarify a bit where the library is actually stored, since I managed to hork mine up. Greg was a delight to converse with and has helped me cement this as a tool I plan to use for the future. One of our standing homework assignments for a while has been to make sure we have representation from every continent. Check in with me. As you'll undoubtedly remember, Rose has taken care of Australia and has a plan to take care of Antarctica. Oh, and while we're on that subject, Quality Control Director Steve did explain to me, quite patiently, why I was confused when the island of Macquarie people said that they were in the sub-Antarctic. But I said I didn't think they were right because they were quite a few degrees above the Antarctic Circle. What QA Director Steve explained to me so carefully was that from the Antarctic perspective, they are not at the bottom of the Earth, but rather at the top. So something sub to the Antarctic Circle will actually be farther north from the circle. Does that make sense? I think he's making it up, but it does kind of make sense. All right, so back to our homework assignment. I mentioned that I used to hear from Paul from Peru on a few occasions, but since I hadn't heard from him in ages, I declared South America as free territory for claiming as a NoSilicast fan. Wow, did that bring Paul out of the woodwork quickly. His email was titled, South America is mine! And in the letter he said, how do you dare to declare South America's open territory when you know is right and well-acclaimed land? Well, Paul, I'm glad to have you back. You are officially declared head of South American NoSilicast fan club. I have to give him this title because it turns out I missed an email from him pretty recently where he had sent me a nice little review of Remote Buddy. Jeez, he did all that work, and then I tried to let his rightfully claimed continent slip out of his grasp. Well, before I give you Paul's review of Remote Buddy, I have to read you this email. This is Scott from Minnesota. I wrote to you in early January, fulfilling the Anchorage, Alaska podcaster listener assignment. Remember that? He's from Minnesota, but he was in Alaska. Unfortunately, I'm a week behind in listening to all of my podcasts. As I am out on my travels again, I just happened to be listening to your February 24th podcast while sitting in my hotel room in CCS, Caracas, Venezuela, South America. I'm not sure if South America podcast listener assignment has already been claimed, and even though I'm not from South America, I was listening from there. Anyway, I would like to claim credit for this assignment. Well, I'm telling you, we got to give Scott some sort of award for this. Not only did he fly to Alaska for one assignment, he flew to Venezuela for the second one. I bet I can get him to fly to Antarctica, don't you think? It's not that much colder than Minnesota anyway, so why not? Well, thanks, Scott. I hereby declare you second in command for South America and first in command of Venezuela. All right, let me get back to Paul, because I better give you Paul's short review of Remote Buddy, which you can find at iospirit.com. He also had a little follow-on letter that's pretty good, too. This is from Paul. I know I promised you a review of Remote Buddy, but I only have some quick comments. I'll tell you why. As you know, Remote Buddy has a 30-day trial, which by now has expired for me. And although I found out a very helpful utility, I do not think it's worth the almost 20 euro. What I have to say is from what I played with it last year. I had no problem installing Remote Buddy, and because I had listened to your review before, it seemed pretty straightforward what to do. Since I only have an iPhone to use as a remote, I could only test the Ajax part of the program, and I must say that I found it very impressive. You can control presentations, iTunes music. However, I could not change the selected speaker to my AirPort Express with it. It simply didn't respond. And you can do other stuff too. But these two are the two that were important to me. Controlling presentations, I tried it with Keynote, and it worked flawlessly. You can also open other programs. I didn't play with it much, however, I tried with Google Earth, which crashed several times upon opening. I could zoom in, move the camera around, and other basic actions. I understand why controlling everything remotely can be of use for other people, but for me, as a student, only the presentations part would be something I would like to have. But for 20 euro, it seems a little expensive. I can stand in front of my laptop for that. What I liked most and found most useful about Remote Buddy was being able to control presentations wirelessly from my iPhone. Well, a free third-party application allows me to do just that, without installing and running special software on my computer all the time, and it's free, did I mention that? It's called Touchpad for iPhone, from touchpadiphone.blogspot.com, and it basically turns my iPhone touchscreen into a wireless touchpad. It can also become a keyboard. This way, I can just control a presentation by tapping the screen as I would on a regular touchpad. This application accomplishes it by connecting to the remote screen sharing server of any Mac or PC. You just activate screen sharing on the sharing system preference and set a password. Since it's a touchpad and keyboard, you can control everything on your computer. The only downside is that you must be watching its screen. It's not an iPhone official application yet, so people who have not jailbroken their iPhones will have to wait until the SDK comes out, which has to be soon. I almost forgot, Allison. You like having Hondas because they're reliable and Bob offers you incredible service, but have you ever been tempted to own another car? Which would it be? Just asking. Well, thanks, Paul, for the two reviews in one. For the jailbirds out there, touchpad for iPhone sounds like a great product. Since I'm a big old scaredy cat now after the bricking of the iPhones, I'm just going to have to wait for the SDK. But knowing that there is a way to do it sure sounds like fun. Oh, and on the car issue, I have never owned any kind of car but a Honda. Seriously, nothing. Never, ever any other kind of car. And as long as Honda Bob is willing to put up with us, I'll always have Hondas and Acuras. But if you're talking about fantasy land, then how about a Bentley? You know, the Bentleys have the best paint finish I've ever felt. I have to confess, there's a Bentley that parks at our gym, and I've been known to just go by and just stroke it gently with my fingertips so I don't set off the car alarm. Wow, that's a nice car. If I had to have a practical fantasy, I think the Infinities are pretty nice. But you know what? That's all crazy talk. Let's get back to reality. Speaking of Honda Bob and homework assignments, I give you an extra credit assignment to help Honda Bob find a new database program for his shiny new Sony Vaio laptop running Vista. By the way, I got to tell you this. He brought it over this weekend and showed off how he used the car clay I'm so fond of to polish his laptop. Sure was shiny. Anyway, that's too funny. But his requirement on the database program was to have it be free or at least cheap to replace the old program he'd been running forever on it under XP. Two people came through for Honda Bob, and Bob and I really appreciate their help. Jeremy Seidick, the author of the book Page Reviewed, remember Design Accessible Websites? He came through for Bob first. He wrote, "Here are a couple I haven't used either deeply. I'm an SQL database person. Base is part of the OpenOffice.org suite, which has Word, Excel, and PowerPoint alternatives, and also file support as well. It doesn't support Microsoft Access database files, but it's available at OpenOffice.org. Kexy is a standalone database solution that I know less about, but it appears to have some basic support for Microsoft Office databases. Kexy is available from kexy-product.org. Hopefully one of these helps out, Jeremy." Well, thanks, Jeremy. I can't believe I didn't think of Base. I mean, I've played around with it because I run OpenOffice and I found it in there, but I don't know diddly about databases, so I didn't really know what to do with it. That's a fantastic idea, and I bet it could really help Bob out. He wasn't using Microsoft Access before anyway, so I don't think the database issue would be a problem. It might be a problem from whatever it was he was using, though. We also heard from Martin from Germany. Remember the guy who saved me in my hours of misery transcoding video in Linux? Well, anyway, he wrote this in for Honda Bob. "Bob might be content using the MySQL tools and the database that comes with it. Not quite sure if it's easy enough for him to use, but I've done that quite a bit, and it was quite helpful. I'm not quite sure how good the Windows version is, but I remember that the boss of one of the companies I worked for during my studies, which is quite a while back now, had tried them and was impressed. And he wasn't even a real geek. So it might be worth a shot." Well, thanks, Martin. I had thought about suggesting MySQL, but wouldn't he have to run MySQL on a server, so he'd have to set up his laptop as a server first, like a WAMP server, Windows, Apache, MySQL, and PHP? At least that's the only way I knew how to do it. I've set it up on my Mac with it set up as a MAMP server. That's Macintosh, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Anyway, thanks to both of you for coming through for Bob. I'm sure one of these three solutions will work, and they're all free. Now, what can Honda Bob do for you now that you guys have taken care of him? Well, Martin in Germany won't get to take advantage of his services, especially since he's without car at the moment. But if you live in the LA or Orange County areas and you drive a Honda or an Acura, Give Honda Bob a call, and he'll come to your house and do all your maintenance and the infrequent repairs Honda's need. You can call him at 562-531-2321, or heck, just shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. Our family is celebrating 30 years of outstanding service by Honda Bob this year. If that is not a recommendation, I don't know what is. Honda Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Rose from Australia wrote in a quick recommendation of the U-Suit, which is a leather cover for the MacBook. They also make them for iPods and iPhones. Here's what she said. You might like to post this link on the show notes, Al, because I'm really pleased with this cover. I don't know if you'd consider it cheap, but $70 Australian is a good chunk of money to me, but it's well worth it. It feels lovely being leather, and it has a sturdy inner cell, so it's protective as well. When I first got my MacBook, I had it at work, and as I didn't have a carry bag for it yet, I was carrying it clasped to my chest, and one of the young guys asked how long I'd had it. I looked at it lovingly and said to him, "We're so in love, it feels like we've been together forever." He gave me a very strange look. Well, Rose does have a way with words, doesn't she? I put a link in the show notes to the U-Suit at Unia website, and from there I also put in a link to Amazon where you can actually buy it. You can buy it a lot of places, but that was an easy link to find. By the way, the $70 Australian translates to $54 US at Amazon in today's dollars.
Hi, this is Hannes from Austria. I'm calling in to give you a short review of Apple's recently released Aperture 2 software. First up, what is Aperture? Aperture is one of Apple's Pro applications. For most of the iLife applications, there is a professional counterpart. iMovie has Final Cut. GarageBand has Logic Studio. Aperture is the professional application for photographers, the replacement for iPhoto. So, how professional do you have to be to use a professional application? I'm not a professional photographer myself, rather an enthusiastic hobbyist. I do, however, have a digital SLR camera. I noticed Bart has one too. These cameras allow exporting the pictures not only as JPEG, but also as RAW formatted. RAW format is not compressed or processed data directly from the sensor, which allows lossless post-processing. macOS X can handle these RAW files natively, at least for most of the cameras, with the exception of some very new models. And therefore, you can use iPhoto 2 to archive and edit your photos. Aperture, however, has some nice additional features. If you want to experiment with photos, it's almost like in the analog times. The original picture is kept in a pristine condition, like a negative, and every modification is only saved as a kind of recipe. So if you make a black and white exposure, a sepia one, and one in color, but cropped with a different white balance, for example, you do not need four times the memory. Other features include a light table, where you can arrange different pictures next to each other and compare them easily. Of course, you can also create websites and the new .Mac web galleries, as well as print books. There is also an intelligent system to back up your precious work on other machines or removable drives, which keeps track of what has changed and if you have imported new photos. The new version also plays nice with Time Machine again. Last but not least, if the huge number of possible modifications and editing tools in Aperture are not enough, a simple key press and the image opens in Adobe Photoshop if you have it installed or any other picture editing software, where you can work on the picture even more. And when you're done, the result is saved in the Aperture library again. So, what are the new features? It's faster. Compared to the old 1.5 version, it's incredibly fast, but possibly it's because the old version was incredibly slow. I would say the speed is now comparable to Adobe Lightroom, the other professional alternative. The interface was improved. The screen is now not cluttered with loads of toolboxes. Instead, editing now works on my 15-inch MacBook Pro without me wishing I had a second screen. Image editing was improved too. So if you have RAW photos, which are just not perfect, you can easily remove overblown highlights or boost saturation selectively without turning every person on the photo into an Englishman after 2 weeks of summer holidays in Greece. You can download and try Aperture for 30 days for free from Apple's website.
Aperture Science. We do what we must because we can. For the good of all of us, except the ones who...
Thank you so much, Hannes, for sending on this review. You're the first person to explain clearly to me exactly why I would want to buy Aperture and where it fits in with all these other tools. This is also possibly one of the best quality audio recordings anyone has ever sent to me. Anytime you want to send in a review for us, I would be delighted to hear it. Thanks again, and I think you just cost me $200. Well, it seems to me that if two Dutch listeners in a row want me to talk about how I create the podcast, who am I to deny that kind of destiny? First, Gerard, and now Renee. I guess I have no choice. I will definitely do this. I started an outline of what I'm going to talk about already, and in fact, that turned into a big comedy of errors because a couple of years ago, I had written a whole thing in Omni Outliner. But when I did my clean install of Leopard, I lost Omni Outliner because it was something that actually came with the OS, I think with Tiger Disk, it was on there. So I dug around, finally found my Tiger Disks, went in into the extra applications, loaded up Omni Outliner, and I could not find that file for the life of me. I knew what it looked like. I knew, but it's hard to search on something called podcast, you know, that's the big keyword. You think I might have a couple of files with a name like that? Well, anyway, I contacted my buddy Ron, and he went back through 3 years of email archives on his external drive, and he was able to find me the file. So anyway, I have my outline back, and I'm going to start to talk to that. So what I'm trying to figure out is whether this is of general interest to everybody or not. I might make this a little extra segment for the show feed, so you could skip them if you don't find them as fascinating as the regular show. Give me some feedback on this if you have a strong feeling either way. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How are you today, Bart?
Well, apart from a chest infection and large quantities of antibiotics, I'm fine. back online, which is a good start, but a little under the weather.
Now, how did you get back online? What happened?
The nice man from ICE finally came around to pay me a visit, and he did an awful lot of jiggery-pokery and talked a lot of rubbish for a while, and then after about an hour, he decided he would pull the plug out of it, let it sit for a few seconds, and put the plug back in, and it started working again.
Wait a minute, I thought you had to repoint the antenna towards the mast and all that stuff.
Well, that's what the nice people in ICE had told me, but that's actually a whole big pile of rubbish. What actually happened was that my mast went down, and my aerial was intelligent, and it decided to associate itself with a different mast that it could just about kind of see, with a signal-to-noise that was atrocious. And then when the real mast came up, my radio didn't change back.
Oh.
So for the last 2 weeks, it was pointing at the complete wrong mast, or it was associated with the complete wrong mast, and was therefore really struggling to get a signal, and was therefore giving me 3 kilobits per second or 5 kilobits per second on a good day.
Oh, wow.
So what support told me was all a bunch of hooey, and what they should have told me was, plug it out, plug it back in again, sir.
So they told you that they turned the mast off, and they apparently just made that up.
Yeah, well, the guy said, oh, I'll have to send that an engineer because your signal-to-noise is low. And I said, well, hang on a sec. My signal-to-noise was really high when I got it installed because I was talking to the engineer. Why has it gone low? And he went, the mast must be gone. So he'd obviously just made that up on the spot because I was asking questions.
Oh, jeez. How frustrating. So you could have had this internet.
Oh, no, it got worse. I could have had internet access. It was the mast itself was fixed after about 6 hours or so from when it went down Monday a week ago. And I got back online on Friday, almost 2 weeks later. But in the meantime, I'd asked to speak to a manager 4 times and had been promised, yes, of course, a manager will call you back. Not a one did. And I asked for a reference number for the case. And I got a very confused engineer who had no idea what a reference number might be or a tracking number.
They have no tracking system?
They have no call tracking system.
Oh, jeez.
And they don't seem to think this is an issue.
Is this a bunch of, like, high school students doing it or something? No, they'd probably be better at it than this, huh?
They'd be more organized, yeah. It's a cowboy outfit, I've come to the conclusion. They can't keep the hardware up. They can't do support. They don't call you back when they say they will. They're just amateurs. So if you're in Ireland and you're thinking of broadband, don't go with Ice Broadband. Save yourself an awful lot of trouble. So I'm stuck in a contract until June, and the second that contract expires, I am out of there so quick.
I bet. No, wait, there was another part you told me in the middle. They sent a guy out, didn't give you a call to tell you that he was coming, and they didn't. Yeah. And so they came and left, and you had to get back in the queue?
Yeah, they sent an engineer who never rang to say he was coming, never rang to say he was here. He just stuck a little piece of cardboard through the letter that says, "Hello, engineer was here at this time. Call this number," which was back to the regular support line, and joined the queue again. Well, I gave that support rep a good earful, so I don't think he put me to the back of the queue because I wouldn't have got an engineer back as quick. That was on Wednesday, and I got my engineer on Friday. It had taken a week to get the first engineer and 2 days to get the second engineer.
Now, we're actually getting the best transmission we've ever had. Why did it actually get better than it used to be?
Because I gave the engineer a good talking to. And he rang head office, and I have a feeling my contention ratio is set higher than it technically should be. But because their network is so horribly overloaded, even now I'm getting about half the service I'm paying for.
Wow.
And it has been tweaked to give me better service than it used to.
But our round-trip time is literally the lowest it's ever been.
Yeah, so I think that's, yeah, although it's just creeped the high side of 200 milliseconds again, but not by much.
We've been to, what was it, the last time we tried it before ice went down on you was like 400 milliseconds, I think.
It was, and that was painful. That was really awful.
I think you can hear it in the recording, too.
Yeah, that was the one where the entire words of mine disappeared into the ether.
Right, right, or they'd speed up and come all in a big jumble together and everything. That was awful. Well, I am glad to have you back, but we have some exciting news this week. I read that the iPhone's coming to Ireland. Are you excited about that?
It should have been exciting news. And it was exciting for a brief 5 minutes or so until I read the actual details. And basically, O2 are out to... I'm trying to pick a word here that's family appropriate. And I'm allowed to say. They basically want to take us to the cleaners. O2 have the iPhone contract in the UK, which is about 60 miles away from us, really, if you go across the Irish Sea. And O2 also got the contract in Ireland. So you would imagine there will be fairly high similarities between the deal you're getting. The UK use pounds, we use euros. So the UK, the lowest package is £35 a month. And you get, I think it's 600 voice minutes and 500 SMS messages included. You get unlimited data, visual voicemail, and I'm not sure, but I think voicemails are free. I'm not 100% sure on that.
So for the people in the US, that's around $70 a month for 600 minutes. We pay $60 a month for 450 minutes, so that sounds pretty good.
That's a decent deal.
Okay.
Now, £35 translates to 45 euro, which is what the Irish O2 people are charging a month. But they're not giving 600 minutes. They're giving 170.
What?
Yep. They're not giving 500 SMS messages. They're giving 100.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
It gets worse. They're not giving us unlimited data. They're giving us 1 gigabyte a month.
No.
They're not giving us visual voicemail, and they're charging us 15 cent a minute to listen to our voicemail.
That's ridiculous. I mean, if we just start with the minutes, I'm not a big person for buying a lot of minutes. I'm not a big minute hog. 170 is like a day and a half. I mean, that's a ridiculously low number.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't do me at all. I'd end up having to pay for my minutes. Because once you go over your minutes, you start paying by the minute. And once you go over your 1 gigabyte of traffic, you start paying by the megabyte.
Now, the 1 gig, that might not be too bad. I mean, because it's not like you download anything. You pretty much use it for web surfing, right?
Yeah, but a gig is awfully little.
Is it?
And, well, I don't think it'll be that big of an issue in most of Ireland because I'm pretty sure our data networks are pretty poor.
So you don't have time to download that much?
Yeah, I've never had an Edge phone, but I don't think our Edge is great. Our 3G, I know for a fact, is not great.
Hmm.
Because I have a 3G data modem and it gets very little signal in most places.
Hmm.
So really, the deal is pretty poor, because add to that the fact that we're in Europe, therefore we pay a premium on all Apple products, which gets justified by tax and shipping and stuff. So the actual price of the iPhone in euros, you basically take the dollar price, you take out the dollar sign and put in a euro sign.
Oh, wow.
But of course, remember that the euro is, or I don't know what the exact exchange rate is, but it's almost 2 euro to the dollar, I think.
Let's see. I'm asking.
See, dashboard
Google
will
right
tell
now.
Me. Dashboard.
Oh, you should do. It's 150%.
Yeah.
So it's one and a half times as much.
Yeah. So we were paying 499 euro for the base model iPhone.
Wow. So, well, wait a minute. But ours is $399.
Okay.
So that's actually even worse. So 499 euros in dollars is $757 to buy a $400 phone, and then for $10 more a month, you get
less of everything.
Third of the minutes and like a tenth of the chat or the SMS.
Yep, it's nothing short of disgraceful.
Now, why do you think they're doing that, though, Bart? That doesn't make any sense. Why would they treat Ireland so differently?
I think it's that O2 Ireland. I mean, O2 Ireland is a separate company to O2 in the UK. It's, you know, they're owned by the same parent, but O2 Ireland has its own CEO who's obviously calling the shots here. And this lady did an interview with one of the Irish newspapers where she referred to Mac users as freaks. And she said, well, the freaks will line up anyway.
Oh, you're kidding me. Not at those prices.
She's pretty sure that there'll be a queue of, quote, freaks outside of her shop on Friday the 14th of March.
That's what the president of O2 said?
It's CEO, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It'd be good to get the word out to the Irish community to tell them to simply not show up on what was the date, March 14th?
March 14th, which I think is a Friday.
Wow.
It's almost always a Friday, isn't it, these launches?
Yeah.
Yeah, Apple chose very poorly by going with O2. I know a lot of people here who have iPhones, and they're getting them from the UK and unlocking them. And I think at these prices, I have to check this now, but I have a vague idea that if I went up north and paid roaming charges all the time, I'd possibly still get a better deal.
At worst case, break even, right?
I certainly don't think there'll be much in it. So that'll be roaming 100% of the time, which is nothing short of a disgrace, really.
Jeez. So if they buy them in England and unlock them and bring them into Ireland, what service do they use? Certainly not O2.
Well, yeah, they'd end up roaming on O2. They'd be roaming, but still on O2.
Oh, okay, so that, you think that's what people are doing, is roaming?
Well, no, the people I know have unlocked iPhones.
Right, but so they unlock them. Who do they attach them to?
Whichever cell carrier they like. I mean, I get a way better deal on minutes and everything else from Vodafone, which is my current cell provider. And I get a very good deal on data from Three. So I really wouldn't be inclined to go with O2. I've never been an O2 customer. Never felt the inkling to join them, and certainly not at these prices. A friend of mine is really keen on getting an iPhone, and he is an O2 customer. And he'd have to pay more money per month for less minutes if he wanted to go to the iPhone.
That's... I'm speechless. I mean, this is making AT&T sound fantastic.
Yeah, which is tough going. Oh, no, there is one thing we have better than you.
What's that?
It's only an 18-month contract.
Now, you know what? I sent Rose an email thanking Australia for pushing Apple, because Australia has basically told Apple that it is illegal to lock the phone to a single ISP and then require this 2-year contract. That's against the law in Ireland. They're not allowed to do that.
I mean,
in Australia, right. And I'm hoping that countries like Australia, and I think you said France did essentially the same thing.
Yeah, but it's not going to affect anyone outside those countries, because they've been through this in France. And the solution they had in France was that they sell two models of the iPhone. They sell a cheaper one that's orange only, and they sell a more expensive, unlocked, in inverted commas, and I really do mean in inverted commas, because it's not actually unlocked. Instead of being locked to one French carrier, it's locked to all the French carriers. It's only France that benefit.
Okay, right. It doesn't benefit other countries. But what I think we're starting to see, at least in the U.S., is that there's starting to be a shift in, just a small shift, but in what the cell phone carriers are doing here, like Verizon, which is well known to be one of the worst for allowing different, you know, new wild ideas. I mean, they're very, very slow to adopt technologies and new concepts, and they have agreed to accept phones from any other network. And that was just, I mean, that would have been unheard of, you know, a year ago, before the iPhone came out. So I'm hoping that maybe if enough countries are pushing for these kinds of laws, and I know there are suggestions up on Capitol Hill that they get some changes in our laws too.
Yeah, but I think it'll only affect those forward-thinking countries, and those of us in Ireland and the US, we're not going to benefit from this. So the Australians are either not going to get the iPhone, or they're going to get the iPhone the way the French got the iPhone. And by the way, when I say a premium on the unlocked iPhone, we're talking one hell of a premium. Hmm. Going by purely memory here, I believe it was €999.
Jeez. That's $1,500.
Uh-huh.
That's insane.
So they're meeting the letter of the law, but certainly not the spirit of it. Well, and really, they're selling an unlocked iPhone, but at such a price that it's effectively pointless.
Now,
may as well not.
I started thinking about this the other day, and I'm thinking, okay, well, yeah, but it's subsidized. And then I realized, no, it isn't. They already told us the iPhone is not subsidized at $499 or $400. So why would they charge you more for an unlocked phone if it's not subsidized? That doesn't make any sense. They can't say both things.
It does make sense. They are counting on the revenue sharing as part of the income for the iPhone.
Well, that's called subsidized.
If you're on a network that isn't. Yes, but you're not subsidizing the price of the handset. They're getting the money back after the fact instead of before the fact. So they're giving you the handset at cost and then getting money off the carriers.
Actually, I read in Wired magazine that they make about $80 on each $400 iPhone. So they aren't even selling. They aren't selling it to you at cost. They're selling it to you at a profit, and then forcing you into a 2-year contract to make more profit.
Yeah, which is why I don't think they're all that. They're not really going that hard after the unlocked iPhones. And what someone was saying, there's 400,000 of them in China. They're happy enough to sell them to you at that price and make their £80.
Well, and obviously, if they do something like this nonsense that O2 in Ireland is doing, that's exactly what you're going to do. I mean, I'm not a big believer in this unlocking and going against license agreements. I don't like that kind of thing. But I think in your position, I'd definitely do it if I could get a better deal. I mean, if it's that absurd.
Yeah, I would much prefer to buy my iPhone off the official carrier, get AppleCare on, and be sure that I'm going to have this device for, you know, whatever the length of AppleCare they'll sell me. Because I don't like the idea of spending that much money on a device which, if it breaks, it's a brick because I've hacked it, therefore I can't go back to Apple with it. That scares the hell out of me. But I'm not prepared to pay the exorbitant prices that O2 are looking for. So for the moment, it comes down to, okay, so the iPod Touch with the email and so forth, yeah, okay, it'll have to do.
It sounds like a great deal, the iPod Touch.
Yeah, the 16-gig iPod Touch costs the same as the 8-gig iPhone for us here in Ireland, except that with the iPod Touch, that's it. You don't have to pay your god-awful amount every month. And, you know, you have email and all that kind of stuff now. So really the difference between the iPod Touch and the iPhone is now literally just the phone. And I have a cell phone. It works fine.
It's not just the phone. You can't surf without being next to a wireless network. That's a huge difference to me.
Yeah, but as I say, with data networks as they are in Ireland, I don't think the iPhone is going to be able to surf without being next to Wi-Fi either.
That's true.
So what you're going to see is more ubiquitous Wi-Fi, like the cloud they have over in England.
Right. Actually, since many, many days of the week you can't surf from a hardwired computer in a house in Ireland, right?
Yeah, but that's my choice of ISP, because there are proper ISPs around here as well. Although, compared to American ISPs, I've been twittering about my ongoing ice issues, mainly to vent, you know, and Americans have been sort of responding, and I've sort of been having it back and forth, you know, so what kind of stuff is normal, you know, because they're saying, oh, wireless to the house, you know, that must be awfully slow. I said, well, actually, on paper, it's very fast. It's 4 meg down, 2 meg up, which for Ireland is fantastic, because the average is 1 meg down, and, you know, people are now going to 2. So being on 4 was fantastic. Of course, we're not actually getting the 4. But there was a guy in America saying, oh, that is very slow. I mean, I said, well, what do you get? He's like, oh, well, we're on 23 megabits at the moment.
What? Oh, he's got to be on Fios then.
I don't know where he is, but that's unheard of here. Like, you know, 8 megabits is the absolute, absolute highest I've ever seen offered around here.
Yeah, that's got to be on fiber optic that guy's talking, because I've never heard that on any kind of wireless network or cable or DSL or anything like that. But Fios can deliver those kind of speeds. But I'm getting around 9 down and 1 or 2 up, depending on a good day and a good time.
Yeah, I actually get my 2 up because obviously contention doesn't kick in on uploads because most of the packages they offer have very low upload speeds. But I'm under a package with a high upload speed, so I actually get my 2 up.
Well, that's
but
good.
Of my 4 down, I'm lucky to get 2. And during peak day, I'll get 1.5 or 1.
Wow. Well, I'm sure glad you got it for this week, at least. We finally made a good connection. This has probably been our best call.
Yeah, but we're not running anywhere near a 4. Just having a quick look at my traffic graphs now, because I run IPCOP as my router, so I get a history of my traffic over a 24-hour period. So I can see now it's not been too bad. At the moment, I'm getting speeds of 200 kilobytes through. So that's not too bad. But on a 4 meg line, you'd expect to go up to 500, whereas I'm peaking out at 400, which I'm seeing only at ridiculous hours of the morning. I'm not seeing those kind of speeds. Those kind of speeds don't kick in until after 2 a.m.
But for a Skype call, what we really care about is that round trip time.
Yeah, that's true. My ping time has come down a lot. The ping time's come down an awful lot since I got it fixed. My ping time was running, just from me to the base station, was running at 270 milliseconds, which is insane.
One thing, I'm sure everybody's getting fascinated here by all of the statistics we're giving, but one thing we would like to know the answer to, and we tried to come up with some reason why this is true, the round-trip time I see is different than the round-trip time Bart sees. And that doesn't make any sense at all. Round-trip should be round-trip, right? Like, I'm seeing 200 right now. What are you seeing?
210.
Oh, that's pretty close this time.
Yeah, but they're just estimates. I mean, I think they're running averages and stuff, and so we have different packets getting lost because it's a connectionless protocol. So packets that you send that get lost, your computer knows nothing about. Packets I send that get lost, my computer knows nothing about. So I think that's possibly skewing out these kind of things.
So if it loses some packets on the way, does that mean it got here faster?
It's hard to know really how, but it's just, I think it's an estimate of some sort because it is a connectionless protocol.
I just picture somebody flying a plane and throwing passengers out on the way going, man, we got there faster because we had fewer people when we got there. Oh, anyway, let's see. Oh, the last thing we wanted to say, I'm kind of sad that February has come and gone and there's no SDK for the iPhone.
No, but there's an event in Apple Town Hall on the 6th of March.
But what I'm hearing is that's an event where they're going to talk about the plan, that they aren't going to release it on the 6th of March.
We don't know. In true Apple style, they're being nice and vague. However, the invitation contained it was called iPhone SDK Roadmap or something, and it contained a picture of sort of a map with SDK and then an arrow pointing forward to the enterprise or something. So it does kind of look like they're talking about stuff to come instead of stuff that's here.
Ah.
We won't know, though, until the 6th, which is what, sometime next week, I think.
I think so.
Thursday or something, is it?
Could be.
Yes, it is Thursday. So, you know, by next week, we'll know whether it's good news or bad news.
Well, that's good. Well, I don't know that we're going to be able to do a live recording of together next week. Steve and I are going to be jaunting off for a romantic 4-day weekend away to celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary.
Oh, how sweet.
No, I will bring my laptop.
That.
I think we will. I will, of course, bring my laptop, but I don't think I'll be bringing a microphone doing recordings.
Well, I won't be around either because I'll finally be getting down to Cavan to see my niece, who is a few weeks old at this stage, and I still haven't seen the poor girl.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Well, congratulations to your brother and his wife.
Indeed. He's starting to pull the jokes now that if I don't get home soon, the kid loves her at school before I've seen her.
All right. Well, we'll work something out, though, to make sure we get some Bart on the show, I'm sure.
I have the whole week off work except for Friday with this chest infection, so I'm sure I'll manage to record something and send it off to you sometime between now and Thursday.
All right, that sounds good, Bart. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Talk to you in a fortnight.
Sounds great. Bye-bye.
Okay, until then, happy computing.
Well, that was sure a fun-filled, packed show this week. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Keep up all that great feedback. You know how much I enjoy getting all of those emails from you. It's just a really fun part of doing the show. Hey, and definitely send me some feedback if you're from Africa or Asia. Hey, Scott, could you possibly stop by those continents on your way back from Venezuela, if that's not too much out of your way? I was just thinking. Well, anyway, send me your feedback at allison@podfeet.com. I sure hope to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.